Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're talking about the potential for offshore drilling near North Carolina. And with me in the studio now is Algernon Cash, National Director of Minority Engagement for America's Energy Forum, which self-identifies as a nonpartisan community of concerned citizens and partners, including the American Petroleum Institute, committed to achieving energy security for the U.S. and holding elected officials accountable for shaping energy policy. Algernon Cash, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me, Rachel.
Joining us also to help parse the potential economic implications locally is UNCW Cameron School of Business Professor Craig Galbraith. Dr. Galbraith, welcome.
Good afternoon.
And from the North Carolina Coastal Federation, we're joined by Mike Giles, an environmental advocate with a coastal focus based in Wilmington. Mike Giles, welcome to the program.
Rachel, happy to be here.
You're invited to join the discussion. If you have a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastlinehqr. Craig Galbraith, would oil and gas development offshore be a boon for the state of North Carolina economically?
I think you have to look at it a couple ways. Certainly, it may generate some revenues, although there are concerns about what sort of revenues might actually flow to the state of North Carolina. I don't believe there'd be a lot of job increases here. The thing that we have to look out for, I think, is that we already have very, very rapid development of oil and natural gas resources within the United States. We've grown about 15% per year now for several years. And there's a danger of growing too rapidly in what are called extractive industries. So we need to be careful about going too fast in some of these issues. And that's a different issue than simply the environmental issue.
And what do you mean by a danger of growing too rapidly? What's the danger other than, you know, we'll talk about the environmental risks in a moment. But
well, in economics, this is actually what's called the Dutch disease. I'm not sure why it's called the Dutch disease, but this is where you have an extractive industry that grows very, very quickly. And what they find is that the resources and employment are taken away from the more productive areas within an economy, such as manufacturing. You can see this in Canada. It's happened many, many times. There's nothing wrong with extractive industries. We just have to be very careful about the speed by which we go. So as you develop these things, and we can see it in North Dakota and South Dakota right now, there are a lot of people moving there because there was so much going on. And with the drop in oil prices, now we're starting to see a lot of people struggling in these particular areas. So we just need to go slow.
So you're saying Dutch disease means that the current resources available, human resources, would be drained off of a current industry and plugged into this new sort of
right.
It's
one of the phenomena of this sort of thing is where you have the productive manufacturing sectors actually getting hurt if you go too quickly within extractive sort of things. And obviously the major extractive industry here that we're talking about is the oil and gas industry.
Algernon Cash, the American Petroleum Institute has been very critical of this draft plan and said that it's keeping 80% of the potential resource closed to exploration. Of course, Secretary Jewell of the Department of the Interior says it's a balanced proposal that would make available nearly 80% of the undiscovered, technically recoverable resources. How do you account for that difference in the way we're looking at what's being made available here to the industry?
Yeah, I think it'd be tough to say that we feel like we're not being critical of BOEM's draft plan. And in fact, we're very thankful that BOEM has finally realized something that we realized many, many years ago, that the Mid-Atlantic should be open to offshore energy exploration, not only oil and gas, but wind production as well. So we're thankful to BOEM for finally realizing something that we've known for a very long time. What we ask, though, is that BOEM really gives serious consideration to advancing the one lease area sale that they've already identified. You know, they've identified that they're going to make that sale in 2021. We believe that sale should occur much earlier in the process.
And you're talking about the Mid-Atlantic lease.
Correct. That's right. That's right. So the only critical nature that we have of the draft plan is that we just believe the sale should be accelerated.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the potential for oil and gas exploration off the coast of North Carolina. You can give us a call at 910-343-1138 to ask a question of any of our guests, or you can email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Ittorio, am I pronouncing your name correctly? Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you. It's actually Victorio.
Victorio. That's a V.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Welcome to Coastline.
Thank you very much. To your guest, my question is thus, would it not be sacrificing the fishing industry to bring in oil off the coast of North Carolina? I don't think that, to me, that's not very wise, my humble opinion.
It's the commercial fishing industry here is an important part of the state's economy, the local economy. Algernon Cash.
Yeah, not only is it very important to our economy here in North Carolina, it's very important to our Gulf states as well. And, you know, I would tell Victorio that, you know, we've been exploring for oil and gas in the Gulf Coast for many, many years. There's actually been hundreds of thousands of wells done all around the world. When you look at offshore production, and we've been able to do it safely and responsibly. So, you know, Victorio, my message to you would be to think that you have to make a choice between abundant and affordable energy and then a safe environment. That's a false choice. I believe that we can have a vibrant commercial fishing industry. I believe that our tourism will remain vibrant, but yet we can still find a way to do exploration and production safely and responsibly.
Victorio, thanks so much for your call. Algernon Cash, Mike Giles with the North Carolina Coastal Federation. When we start to raise these questions about how other industries like the commercial fishing industry might be affected, it also calls to mind some of the environmental disasters that we've had in recent history. The 2010 BP Deepwater Horizon accident, the biggest accident in history. How do you... It sort of strains credulity. BP was found grossly negligent in that case. So what do you say to people who are concerned about that? That doesn't sound like a great record.
Yeah, well, we certainly need to be very concerned about the BP oil spill. I think that your listeners and others who are concerned about the issue, I think the real focus needs to be put on what have we done since the spill occurred. So what have we done to make sure it's prevented? And if another spill was to happen, what have we done to make sure that we can intervene properly and that we have the right type of technology and equipment on hand to make sure that we can mitigate any damage to the environment? And I would argue that since that spill occurred in 2010, the industry and government has come together very successfully to craft new policies, new regulations, new processes and procedures to try to make sure that we have the right measures in place to prevent, intercede properly, and respond capably to another spill if it was to occur. And then I would also add that, you know, it was a great disaster, and we do need to be very sensitive to that. However, if you were to ask your listeners to point to another oil disaster prior to that, they would probably bring up the Exxon Valdez from the early 90s. My point in saying that is we actually have we've actually lost more people from disappearing airplanes than we have from these disasters. So the bottom line is we're not here today having a debate whether or not we should shut down the flight industry or we shouldn't fly airplanes any longer. No, these disasters occur. We learn from them and we figure out how to do it better, more safely and more responsibly. And I think that same protocol should apply to the oil and gas industry.
And there was a national commission that was formed after the BP accident. One of the scientists from that commission says we should also require full environmental impact statements for lease sales and for sites with complex geology or ultra-deepwater frontier areas. And the scientist says all offshore drilling assessments must be shaped by the best science, and we can elevate the role of scientific research by creating a distinct science division within the federal oversight structure. In other words, this person is saying this is one of the big missing pieces, because right now there's a great reliance on the industry for data and for self-policing.
Well, that's true. And that same commission, I would also add, said that offshore energy production is now safer today than it has ever been because of the response to the oil spill in 2010. So I agree. And one of the things that was created after that spill, and it was created by the industry, was the Center for Offshore Safety. However, the Center for Offshore Safety has been working very closely with the Bureau for Safety and Environmental Enforcement to make certain that the industry is policed the proper way. So what you just highlighted is actually occurring right now through a collaboration between the industry and government.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the potential for offshore drilling in North Carolina. If you have a question, you can give us a call at 910-343-1138. We have an email from Anonymous who has a few questions here. The first one, how much gas or oil would have to be found to make it economically feasible for the industry to use our coast for their economic benefit?
Well, I can possibly answer
Craig Galbraith.
It's not so much the amount, but the price that is being pulled out. Again, there's always a break-even cost for any economic sort of thing. When you look at the cost per barrel and how it's gyrated between $40 is up to about $50 per barrel, now up to over $100, we don't really know the cost of what it's going to take per barrel to pull that out. In Texas, the break-even point is about $40 to maybe $70, and Alaska it's under $40, North Dakota up to $80. If we find that it's going to cost $30 to pull it out, they're going to pull out a lot. If it's $100, no one's going to drill for it.
How would they get the raw product from the ocean to the port? This is a logistical question. And then where would it go for refinement and processing? Or are they planning on building an oil refinery here because it would be more efficient?
There's no current plans at all whatsoever, any discussion at all whatsoever, to have a refinery built off the coast of North Carolina. So most of the refining industry is based down in the Gulf. So I think you'll continue to see the industry transport the resource there for refinement. But you just brought up a great point. You asked the question, how do they get the resource back from the offshore rig back on the coast? Well, they're going to have different types of companies providing that transport. And that's where this big, huge indirect jobs opportunity comes from. You know, I've got great friends. I'm great friends with the mayor of Kinston, B.J. Murphy, and I've went down and visited Greenville, and I've been up to Rocky Mount, and I've spent a lot of time in eastern North Carolina. These people are desperately in need of jobs. And if we're able to move forward with offshore production, the types of indirect jobs that we could create around what you just identified, that puts these people in eastern North Carolina back to work. And that's why we're so passionately trying to promote this concept.
Now, that's an interesting point, Algernon Cash, with America's Energy Forum, because Craig Galbraith, when you were taking a look at offshore wind a year or so ago, one of your criticisms of this as an economic boon for the state was that much of the manufacturing of the parts for the turbines would be done in China and it would be shipped here. Many of the jobs that would be created here would be temporary construction jobs. Are the jobs that Algernon is talking about, those indirectly related jobs, are those temporary, or is this something that would have to be ongoing?
Well, certainly when you look at the economics, there's several components. There's the construction process. There are the parts and the components that will go into it. We don't exactly know. Certainly one of the complaints I have had when we talk about any sort of federal lands being allocated for any sort of economic activity, whether it's on land or offshore, is that we should make sure that those components and that construction process is being given to Americans. And I think that's very, very important. We don't really know exactly what the indirect employment is going to be because we don't have the facilities yet. We don't know how it's going to take place. They may load it up on ships there and take it down to the Gulf Coast. We really don't know the situation. It's very difficult to determine what the economic impact is.
And we have another caller, Susie from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hey, Ralph.
Oh, hi, Ralph. Okay.
How are you?
Welcome.
Thank you. One of your men made the analogy between the deaths from the Gulf oil spill and airplane flight deaths, which I thought was really strange. And as bad as the deaths were, it was the environmental catastrophe that the impact of that was the true disaster of that. And I know you talk about all these new things, the improvements. Have them guarantee us that anything like that damn thing that happened down there ain't going to happen here.
There's some real concern there, Algernon Cash.
No, that is real concern. And Ralph, I appreciate you calling. I appreciate you listening today because obviously you care a lot about the issue. You know, I would just say no one can ever offer you a guarantee. You go ask American Airlines to offer you a guarantee that they won't have a plane crash. Go ask GM to offer you a guarantee that no car is ever going to crash. There's no industry, there's no company that will ever provide you a guarantee. The bottom line is, the point that I was trying to make in my analogy is that we have a lot of other risk and a lot of other things happen with a lot of other industries. Right now in our country, you have more people dying from car crashes every year than you have from any other source out there. But again, we're not here on the show today talking about stopping people or banning people from driving. No, what we do is we use police and we use rules and we stop lights and we try to do it safely and responsibly. It doesn't quite prevent every risk. It doesn't get rid of every accident, but we do it safely and responsibly. And my only argument is that we can also do the same thing with the oil and gas industry. We live in the greatest country in the world with some of the smartest people, some of the most innovative, and some of the most creative people right here in America. And I'm not convinced that we can't find a way to do this safely and responsibly.
Ralph, thanks so much for your call. Holly, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I am new to Wilmington, but I studied environmental sustainability at Meredith, and I appreciate Ralph's comment because that was what I was really curious about as well. Is there are certainly no guarantees with any industry that accidents aren't going to happen, but that is where regulation really comes into play. And I agree with Mr. Cash that there is this misconception that a safe environment and a flourishing economy can't coincide, but that does require acceptance and a willingness to have conversations about really strict local and state regulations, and that cuts into profits. And so if we're talking about doing this off of the coast of North Carolina, the only guarantee that this isn't going to happen on an industry level is to not do it. So if there aren't any guarantees, how open are you as a member of this industry to really strict regulations, even if it cuts into the bottom line?
So, Holly, you're almost addressing the not-in-my-backyard argument. We've heard people say it'll be interesting for some of the governors of these states that have said we're very much in support of seeing this kind of oil and gas development off the coast. What will happen when they start to see some of the first environmental impacts?
Yeah, just to respond to Holly, I mean, I think she was asking me how in favor am I of strict regulation. I'm very in favor of it. Holly, let me tell you, I've got an 11-year-old little girl. I love her to death. I don't want her breathing dirty air or drinking dirty water any more than anybody else in this state. My daughter loves to go to the beach. She loves to curl her toes in the sand, and I want to continue to take her there and enjoy it with her. So I do believe that we need to have strict regulations and make sure we have the right rules and the right standards and best practices in place so that we can do this safely and responsibly. And I think my friends in the environmental community, where they can use their energy best, and no pun intended, is to help us craft the right regulations. Instead of trying to be an obstacle and instead of trying to say no all the time, work with us in collaboration to make sure we have the right rules in place so we can prevent the kind of issues that happen down at the Gulf Coast.
Holly, thanks so much for your call. And Mike Giles with the North Carolina Coastal Federation. The Coastal Federation, as soon as this draft proposal was announced, had some pretty serious criticism of the proposal and raised some questions. What are some of those questions that the Federation's concerned about?
There's been some good discussions and good calls. You know, this is all about what does North Carolina want to be for our future generations? We have one of the most a national treasure of our coast. We're located on the Graveyard Atlantic. We have the most unique coastal ecosystem in North America. Is the risk worth the rewards? We don't believe so. We need to think beyond the box. Algernon talks about strict regulations, but the federal government is hammered by industry continually to weaken, to not have strict regulations on a lot of issues concerning the environment, the economy, and our human health. What we need to do is thinking about putting our homegrown energy into and our human experience and human abilities into thinking beyond this transient industry. It will only be on our coast if it ever is permitted to be here for a short period of time. There's just a drop of oil and natural gas located off of our continental shelf.
You're saying there's just a drop of oil and natural gas?
Compared to our U.S. demand daily, it's just an infinite amount. Is the risk worth the reward? We don't think so. We think this five-year plan should include a comprehensive energy strategy, just not oil and gas, but a comprehensive energy strategy that takes into account what happened to the word of conserve. We no longer have conservation efforts in the United States on how much electricity we use, how many miles per gallon our cars get. If they increase the miles per gallon requirement of our cars to 35 miles per gallon, we would save 1.1 million gallons of oil per day. We are located in the Graveyard of the Atlantic, the most volatile, the most dynamic coastal ecosystem there is. Is this risk worth the reward? We don't think so.
And we'll talk more about that when we come back. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. If you have a question for our guests, give us a call, 910-343-1138, or email us at coastline@whqr.org. This is Coastline.